If you need me to stay, I will. She shook her head. I don't want you to. You're about to start a whole new chapter of your life, and I can't take that away from you. But I don't have to go now. Classes don't start right away. I don't want you to, she said again. Her voice was soft but implacable. You're going off to college, and it's not your problem. I know that might sound harsh, but it isn't. He's my dad, not yours, and that will never change. And I don't want to think about what you might be giving up, in addition to everything else that's going on in my life. Can you understand that? Her words had the ring of truth to them, even if he wished she were wrong. After a moment, he untied his macrame bracelet and held it out to her. I want you to have this, he whispered, and by her expression he could tell that she understood how much her acceptance meant to him. She flashed a small smile as she closed her hand around it. He thought she was about to say something when both of them heard the workshop door suddenly bang open. For an instant, Will thought someone had broken in. Then he saw Jonah clumsily dragging a broken chair outside. With enormous effort, he lifted it up and tossed it over the dune near the workshop. Even from this distance, Will could see the fury in Jonah's expression. Ronnie was already moving off the porch. "Jonah!" she screamed, breaking into a run. Will leapt after her, almost bumping into her as she reached the workshop door. Looking past her, he saw Jonah trying to push a heavy crate across the floor. He was struggling mightily, oblivious to their sudden appearance. "What are you doing?" Ronnie cried. "When did you come out here?" Jonah continued to push at the crate, grunting with the effort. "Jonah!" Ronnie shouted. Her cry broke through his tunnel-like focus, and he turned toward Will and his sister, surprised by their presence. "I can't reach it," he cried, angry and on the verge of tears. "I'm not tall enough." "Can't reach what?" she asked before taking a sudden step forward. "You're bleeding," she said, panic rising in her voice. Will noticed the torn jeans and blood on Jonah's leg as Ronnie rushed toward him. Driven by his own demons, Jonah pushed frantically at the crate, and the corner of the box smashed into one of the shelves. The half-squirrel, half-fish creature toppled off, landing on Jonah just as Ronnie reached him. His face was tight and red. "Go away! I can do this by myself! I don't need you!" he screamed. He tried to move the crate again, but it was pinned by the shelf, locked in place. Ronnie tried to help him, but Jonah shoved her away. By now, Will could see the tears on his cheeks. "I told you to go away!" he shouted at her. "Dad wants me to finish the window. Me, not you. That's what we were doing all summer." His words came out in broken gasps, angry and terrified. "This was what we did. All you ever cared about were the turtles, but I was with him every day." As he shouted through his tears, his voice cracked. "And now I can't reach the middle part of the window. I'm too short. But I had to finish it because maybe if I finish it, then Dad will get better. He has to get better. So I tried to use the chair to reach the middle of the window, but it broke and I fell into the glass and I got mad and then I wanted to use the crate, but it's too heavy." By then he could barely get the words out and he suddenly rocked back and collapsed onto the ground. Wrapping his arms around his knees and lowering his head, he began to sob, his shoulders convulsing. Ronnie took a seat on the floor beside him. She slipped an arm around his shoulder and pulled him toward her as he continued to cry. As Will watched, he could feel a lump in the back of his throat, knowing he didn't belong here. Still, he stayed while Ronnie held her brother as he cried, not trying to hush him or assure him that everything was going to be okay. She just held him wordlessly until his sobs began to subside. Finally, he looked up, his eyes red through his glasses, his face blotchy with tears. When Ronnie spoke, her voice was gentle, as kind as he had ever heard her. "Can we go in the house for a few minutes? I just want to check the cut on your leg." Jonah's voice was still quavering. What about the window? It has to be finished. Ronnie met Will's eyes, then returned her gaze to Jonah. Can we help? Jonah shook his head. You don't know how. Show us. After Ronnie cleaned Jonah's leg and put some band-aids on it, Jonah led them back to the workshop. The window was nearly complete. All of the detailed etchings of the faces were finished, and the reinforcing bars were already in place. The work that remained consisted of adding hundreds of intricate pieces to form the heavenly glow in the sky. Jonah showed Will how to cut the lead strips and taught Ronnie how to solder. Jonah cut the glass, as he'd been doing most of the summer, and slid them into the lead strips before making room for Ronnie to set the pieces in place. It was hot and crowded in the workshop, but eventually the three of them fell into a rhythm of sorts. At lunchtime, Will ran out to pick up some burgers and a salad for Ronnie. They took a short break while they ate, but were soon back at their task. As the afternoon rolled on, Ronnie called the hospital three times, only to learn that her dad was either in tests or sleeping, but doing well. By the time dusk settled in, they'd finished about half the work. Jonah's hands were getting tired, and they took another break to eat before moving some lamps from the living room to add additional light to the workshop. Darkness fell, and Jonah was yawning steadily by 10. When they went inside to relax for a few minutes, Jonah fell asleep almost immediately. Will carried him to his room and put him in bed. By the time he returned to the living room, Ronnie was already back at the workshop. Will took over the glass cutting. He'd seen Jonah doing it all day, and though he made some mistakes in the beginning, he quickly got the hang of it. They worked through the night, and by the time dawn began to break, both of them were dead on their feet. On the table in front of them lay the completed window. Will wasn't sure how Jonah would feel knowing he hadn't had a hand in finishing the final pieces, but he figured Ronnie would know how to handle it.
You two look like you've been up all night, said a voice behind them.
Turning around, Will saw Pastor Harris standing in the doorway. Pastor Harris was leaning on his cane. He was wearing a suit, probably for his Sunday church service. But Will noticed the horrific scars on the backs of his hands and knew immediately that they extended up his arms. Thinking back to the fire at the church and the secret he'd kept all these months, he found it impossible to meet the pastor's eyes. "We've been finishing the window," Ronnie said hoarsely. Pastor Harris motioned toward the window.
"May I?"
Ronnie nodded. Of course. Pastor Harris stepped into the workshop, moving slowly. His cane tapped against the wooden floor as he approached. At the table, his expression changed from curiosity to wonderment. Leaning on his cane, he ran a knobby, scarred hand over the glass.
It's incredible, he breathed. It's more beautiful than I would have imagined possible.
My dad and Jonah did all the work, Ronnie said. We just helped to finish it. He smiled.
Your father will be so pleased.
How's the church coming? I know my dad would love to see the window in place.
From your mouth to God's ears, he shrugged. The church isn't as popular as it once was, so there aren't as many members, but I have faith that it will work out.
From her anxious expression, Will knew Ronnie was wondering whether or not the window would be installed in time, but was afraid to ask.
Your dad is doing well, by the way, Pastor Harris said. He should be out of the hospital soon, and you should be able to visit him this morning. You didn't miss much yesterday. I spent most of the day sitting in his room alone while they were running tests.
Thanks for staying with him.
No, sweetheart, he said. He glanced at the window again. Thank you.
It was quiet in the workshop as Pastor Harris made his way out. Will watched him go, unable to shake the image of his scarred hands. In the silence, he studied the window, struck by the work that had been necessary to make a new one, a window that shouldn't have had to be replaced. He thought of the pastor's words and the possibility that Ronnie's dad might not even live to see the window installed. Ronnie was lost in her own thoughts as he turned to her. He felt something collapse inside him like a house of cards. "There's something I need to tell you." As they sat on the dune, Will told her everything from the beginning. When he finished, Ronnie seemed confused. "You're saying that Scott started the fire? And that you've been protecting him?" Her voice rang with disbelief. "You've been lying for him?" Will shook his head. "It's not like that. I told you it was an accident." "It doesn't matter." Ronnie's eyes searched his. "Accident or not, he needs to take responsibility for what he did." "I know. I told him to go to the police." "But what if he doesn't? Are you going to keep covering for him forever? You're going to let Marcus keep controlling your life? It's wrong." "But he's my friend." Ronnie leapt to her feet. "Pastor Harris almost died in that fire. He spent weeks in the hospital. Do you know how painful burns are? Why don't you ask Blaze how it feels? And the church? You know he can't even rebuild it. And now my dad's never going to see the window where it belongs?" Will shook his head, trying to stay calm. He could see that it was all too much for Ronnie, her dad, his impending departure, her upcoming court date. "I know it was wrong," he said quietly, "and I felt guilty about it. I can't tell you how many times I've wanted to go to the police." "So what?" she demanded. "That doesn't mean anything. Didn't you hear me when I told you about admitting in court what I had done? Because I knew what I did was wrong. Truth only means something when it's hard to admit. Don't you get that? That church was Pastor Harris's life. It was my dad's life. And now it's gone, and the insurance won't cover the damage, and they have to hold services in a warehouse." "Scott's my friend," he protested. "I can't just throw him to the wolves." She blinked, wondering if he could even hear what he was saying. "How can you be so selfish?"
"I'm not being selfish."
"That's exactly what you are, and if you can't understand that, then I don't want to talk to you," she said. She turned and started toward the house. "Just go. Leave." "Ronnie," he called out, getting up to follow her. She sensed his movement and whirled to face him. "It's over, okay?"
"It's not over. Come on, be reasonable."
"Reasonable?" She waved her hands. "You want me to be reasonable? You haven't just been lying for Scott. You've been lying to me, too. You knew why my dad was making the window. You stood right next to me, and you never said anything about it." Her words seemed to clarify something in her mind, and she took another step backward. "You're not who I thought you were. I thought you were better than this." He flinched, unable to think of a response. But when he took a step forward, she retreated. "Go! You're leaving anyway, and we're never going to see each other again. Summers always come to an end. We can talk and pretend all we want, but we can't change that. So let's just end it here and now. I can't handle all this right now, and I can't be with someone I don't trust." Her eyes glittered with unshed tears. "I don't trust you, Will. You need to go." He couldn't move, couldn't speak. "Leave!" she shouted, and ran back to the house. That night, his last night in Wrightsville Beach, Will sat in the den, still trying to make sense of everything that had happened. He looked up when his dad walked in.
"You okay?" Tom asked. "You were kind of quiet at dinner."
"Yeah," Will answered. "I'm okay." His dad wandered to the couch and took a seat across from him.
"Are you nervous about leaving tomorrow?"
Will shook his head.
"No." "Are you all packed?"
Will nodded and felt his dad studying him. His dad leaned forward.
"What's going on? You know you can talk to me."
Will took his time before answering, suddenly nervous. Finally, He met his father's eyes. If I asked you to do something important for me, something big, would you do it? No questions asked? Tom leaned back, still studying him, and in the silence, Will knew what the answer would be.
Chapter 33. Ronnie.
You really finished the window?
Ronnie watched her dad as he talked to Jonah in the hospital room. Thinking, he seemed better. He still looked tired, but his cheeks had a bit more color, and he was moving with greater ease. It's awesome, Dad, Jonah said. I can't wait for you to see it.
But there were still so many pieces left.
Ronnie and Will helped a little, Jonah admitted.
Yeah?
I had to show them how. They didn't know anything. But don't worry, I was patient, even when they made mistakes. Her dad smiled.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, I'm a pretty good teacher.
I'm sure you are.
Jonah wrinkled his nose. It smells kind of funny in here, doesn't it?
A little.
Jonah nodded. I thought so. He motioned toward the television. Have you been watching any movies? Her dad shook his head.
Not too many.
What does that do? Her dad glanced at the IV bag.
It's got some medicine in it.
Will it make you better?
I'm feeling better now.
So you're coming home?
Pretty soon.
Today?
Maybe tomorrow, he said. But you know what I could use?
What?
A soda. Do you remember where the cafeteria is? Down the hall and around the corner?
I know where it is. I'm not a little kid.
What kind do you want?
A Sprite or a 7-Up? I don't have any money, though.
When her dad glanced at her, Ronnie took it as a cue to reach into her back pocket.
I've got some, she said.
She pulled what she thought he'd need from her pocket and handed it to him as he headed out the door. As soon as he was gone, she could feel her dad staring at her.
The lawyer called this morning. They postponed your court date until late October.
Ronnie's gaze flickered to the window. I can't think about that right now.
I'm sorry,
he said. He was quiet for a moment, and she could feel him watching her.
How's Jonah really holding up?
He asked. Ronnie gave a half shrug. Lost, confused, scared, barely holding it together. Like me, she wanted to say. Her dad motioned for her to come over. She took a seat in the chair that Jonah had been using. He reached for her hand and squeezed it.
I'm sorry I wasn't strong enough to stay out of the hospital. I never wanted you to see me like this.
She was already shaking her head. Never, ever apologize for that.
But no buts, okay? I needed to know. I'm glad I know.
He seemed to accept that. But then he surprised her.
Do you want to talk about what happened with Will?
What makes you say something like that? She asked.
Because I know you. Because I know when something else is on your mind. And because I know how much you cared for him.
Ronnie sat up straighter, not wanting to lie to him.
He went home to pack, she said.
She could feel her dad studying her.
Did I ever tell you my dad was a poker player?
Yeah, you told me. Why? Do you want to play poker?
No, he said. I just know there's more to what happened with Will than what you're saying. But if you don't want to talk about it, that's okay too.
Ronnie hesitated. She knew he'd be understanding, but she wasn't ready yet. Like I said, he's leaving, she said instead. And with a nod, her dad let it go.
You look tired, he said. You should go home and take a nap later.
I will. But I want to stay here for a while. He adjusted his hand in hers.
Okay.
She glanced at the IV bag Jonah had asked about before. But unlike her brother, She knew it wasn't medicine to make him better.
"Does it hurt?"
she asked. He paused before answering.
"No,"
he answered.
"Not too much."
"But it has hurt?" Her dad started to shake his head.
"Sweetheart, I want to know. Did it hurt before you got here?
Tell me the truth, okay?" He scratched at his chest before answering.
"Yes."
"How long?"
"I don't know what you mean."
"I want to know when it started hurting," Ronnie said, leaning over the bed rail. She willed him to meet her eyes. Again, he shook his head.
"It's not important. I'm feeling better, and the doctors know what to do to keep helping me."
"Please," she said. "When did it start hurting?" He looked down at their hands, clasped so tightly on the bed.
"I don't know. March or April. But it wasn't every day."
"When it hurt before," she went on, determined to hear the truth, "what did you do?"
"It wasn't so bad before," he answered.
"But it still hurt, right?"
"Yes."
"What did you do?"
"I don't know," he protested. "I tried not to think about it. I focused on other things."
She could feel the tension in her shoulders, hating what he might say but needing to know. "What did you focus on?" Her dad smoothed out a wrinkle in the bedsheet with his free hand.
"Why is this so important to you?"
"Because I want to know whether you focus on other things by playing the piano." As soon as she said it, she knew she was right. "I saw you playing that night in the church, the night you had that coughing fit. And Jonah said you'd been sneaking over there as soon as the piano came in."
"Honey, do you remember when you said that playing the piano made you feel better?"
Her dad nodded. He could see what was coming, and she was sure he wouldn't want to answer. But she had to know. "Did you mean that you didn't feel the pain as much? And please, tell me the truth. I'll know if you're lying." Ronnie would not be deflected, not this time. He closed his eyes briefly, then met her gaze.
"Yes."
"But you built the wall around the piano anyway?"
"Yes,"
he said again. With that, she felt her fragile composure give way. Her jaw began to quiver as she lowered her head to her dad's chest. Her dad reached out to her.
"Don't cry,"
he said.
"Please don't cry."
But she couldn't help it. The memories of how she'd acted back then and the knowledge of what he had been going through drained whatever energy she had left.
"Oh, Daddy."
"No, baby. Please don't cry. It wasn't so bad back then. I thought I could handle it, and I think I did. It wasn't until the last week or so that..." He touched a finger to her jaw, and when she looked into his eyes, what she saw there almost broke her heart. She had to look away.
"I could handle it then,"
he repeated, and she knew by his voice that he meant it.
"I promise. It hurt, but it wasn't the only thing I thought about, because I could escape it in other ways, like working on the window with Jonah, or just enjoying the kind of summer I dreamed about when I asked your mom to let both of you stay with me." His words seared her, his forgiveness more than she could bear.
"I'm so sorry, Daddy." "Look at me," he said, but she couldn't. She could think only about his need for the piano, something she'd taken away from him, because she'd thought only about herself, because she'd wanted to hurt him, because she hadn't cared. "Look at me," he said again. His voice was soft but insistent. Reluctantly, she raised her head. "I had the most wonderful summer of my life," he whispered. "I got to watch you save the turtles, and I had the chance to see you fall in love, even if it doesn't last forever.
And most of all, I got to know you as a young woman, not a little girl, for the first time ever. And I can't tell you how much joy those things gave to me. That's what got me through the summer. She knew his words were sincere, which only made her feel worse. She was about to say something when Jonah burst through the door. "Look who I found," he said, motioning with the can of Sprite. Ronnie looked up to see her mom standing behind Jonah. "Hey, sweetie," she said. Ronnie turned to her dad. He shrugged. "I had to call her," he explained. "Are you doing okay?" her mom asked. "I'm okay, Kim," her dad answered. Her mom took that as an invitation to step into the room. "I think we all need to talk," she announced. The following morning, Ronnie had made up her mind and was waiting in her room when her mom walked in. "Have you finished packing yet?" She fixed her mom with a calm but determined stare. "I'm not going back to New York with you." Kim put her hands on her hips. "I thought we discussed this." "No," Ronnie said evenly. "You discussed this. But I'm not coming with you." Her mom ignored her comment. "Don't be ridiculous. Of course you're coming home." "I'm not going back to New York." Ronnie crossed her arms, but didn't raise her voice. "Ronnie!" She shook her head, knowing she'd never been more serious in her life. "I'm staying, and I'm not going to discuss it. I'm 18 now, and you can't force me to go back with you. I'm an adult, and I can do what I want." As she absorbed Ronnie's words, her mom shifted uncertainly from one foot to the other. "This," she finally said, motioning toward the living room, trying to sound reasonable. "This isn't your responsibility." Ronnie took a step toward her. "No? Then whose is it? Who's going to take care of him?" "Your dad and I have talked about that." "Oh, you mean about Pastor Harris?" Ronnie demanded. "Oh, yeah, like he can take care of Dad if he collapses or starts vomiting blood again. Pastor Harris can't physically do it." "Ronnie," her mother began. Ronnie threw up her hands, her frustration and resolve growing. "Just because you're still mad at him doesn't mean that I have to be mad at him, okay? I know what he did, and I'm sorry he hurt you, but this is about my dad. He's sick, and he needs my help, and I'm going to be here for him. I don't care that he had an affair. I don't care that he left us. But I do care about him." For the first time, her mom seemed genuinely taken aback. When she spoke again, her voice was soft. "What exactly did your dad tell you?" Ronnie was about to protest that it didn't matter, but something stopped her. Her mother's expression was so strange, almost guilty. As if... She stared at her mom, recognition dawning even as she spoke. "It wasn't Dad who had the affair, was it?" she said slowly. "It was you." Her mother's posture didn't change, but she looked stricken. The realization hit Ronnie with an almost physical force. Her mom had the affair, not her dad. And the room suddenly felt suffocating as the implications became clear. "That's why he left, isn't it? Because he found out. But you let me believe all along that it was all his fault, that he walked out for no good reason. You pretended it was him, when it was you all along. How could you do that?" Ronnie could barely breathe. Her mom seemed unable to speak, and Ronnie found herself wondering whether she'd ever known her mom at all. "Was it with Brian?" she suddenly demanded. "Were you cheating on Dad with Brian?" Her mom stayed silent, and again Ronnie knew she was right. Her mom had let her believe it was her dad who had left for no reason at all. "And I didn't talk to him for 3 years because of it." "You know what?"
Ronnie snapped.
I don't care. I don't care what happened between the two of you. I don't care what happened in the past, but I'm not leaving my dad, and you can't make me.
Who's not leaving? Jonah interrupted. He just walked into the room holding a glass of milk, and he turned from their mom to her. She could hear the panic in his voice.
Are you staying here?
He asked. It took a moment for Ronnie to answer, as she wrestled her anger under control.
Yeah, she said, hoping she sounded calmer than she felt.
I'm staying.
He put his glass of milk on the dresser.
Then I'm staying too, he announced. Her mom looked suddenly helpless, and though Ronnie could still feel the sharp edge of her anger, there was no way she was going to let Jonah watch his father die. She crossed the room and squatted down.
I know you want to stay, but you can't, she said gently.
Why not? You're staying.
But I don't have school.
So what? I can go to school here. Dad and I talked about it.
Their mom moved toward them.
Jonah.
Jonah suddenly backed away, and she could hear the panic rising in his voice as he realized he was outnumbered.
I don't care about school. That's not fair. I want to stay here.
Chapter 34. Steve. He wanted to surprise her. That had been his plan, anyway. He'd played a concert in Albany. His next performance was scheduled in Richmond 2 days later. Normally, he never went home while on tour. It was easier to maintain a kind of rhythm as he traveled from city to city. But because he had a bit of extra time and hadn't seen his family in 2 weeks, he caught a train and arrived in the city as the lunch crowd came streaming out of their office towers in search of something to eat. It was pure coincidence that he saw her at all. Even now, the odds seemed so remote as to be impossible. It was a city of millions, and he was near Penn Station, and he was walking past a restaurant that was already nearly full. His first thought, when he saw her, was that the woman looked exactly like his wife. She was seated at a small table wedged against the wall, across from a gray-haired man who appeared to be a few years older than her. She was dressed in a black skirt and a red silk blouse and was running a finger over the rim of her wine glass. He captured all of that and did a quick double take. It actually was Kim, he realized, and she was dining with a man that he'd never seen before. Through the window, he watched as she laughed, and with a sinking certainty, he knew he'd seen that laugh before. He remembered it from years ago, back when things were better between them. When she rose from the table, he watched as the man stood and placed his hand on the small of her back. The man's touch was tender, almost familiar, as though he'd done it hundreds of times before. She probably liked the way he touched her, Steve thought, as he watched the stranger kiss his wife on the lips. He wasn't sure what to do, but thinking back, he couldn't remember feeling much of anything. He knew they'd been distant with each other. He knew they'd been arguing too much, and he supposed that most men would have gone into the restaurant and confronted the two of them. Perhaps even made a scene. But he wasn't like most men. So he shifted the small bag he'd packed the night before to his other hand, turned around, and headed back in the direction of Penn Station. He caught a train 2 hours later and arrived in Richmond late that evening. As always, he picked up the phone to call his wife, and she answered on the second ring. He could hear the television in the background as she said hello. You finally made it, huh? She asked. I was wondering when you were going to call. As he sat on the bed, he pictured the stranger's hand on the small of her back. I just got in, he said. Anything exciting happen? He was in a budget hotel, and the comforter was fraying slightly at the edges. There was an air conditioner beneath the window, and it rattled, making the curtains move. He could see dust coating the top of the television set. No, he said. Nothing exciting at all. In the hospital room, he remembered those images with a clarity that surprised him. He supposed it was because he knew Kim would be arriving soon, along with Ronnie and Jonah. Ronnie had called him earlier to tell him that she wasn't going back to New York. He knew it wasn't going to be easy. He remembered his dad's shrunken, emaciated figure toward the end, and he didn't want his daughter to see him that way. But her mind was made up, and he knew he wouldn't be able to change it. But it scared him. Everything about this scared him. He'd been praying regularly in the last couple of weeks, or at least that's how Pastor Harris had once described it. He didn't clasp his hands or bow his head. He didn't ask to be healed. He did, however, share with God the concerns he had regarding his children. He supposed he wasn't much different from most parents in his worries for them. They were still young, they both had long lives ahead of them, and he wondered what would become of them. Nothing fancy. He would ask God whether he thought they would be happy or continue to live in New York or whether they would ever get married and have children. The basics, nothing more. But it was then, at that moment, that he finally understood what Pastor Harris had meant when he said he walked and talked with God. Unlike Pastor Harris, however, he'd yet to hear the answers in his heart or experience God's presence in his life, and he knew he didn't have much time. He glanced at the clock. Kim's plane was leaving in less than 3 hours. She would leave from the hospital to go straight to the airport with Jonah sitting beside her, and the realization was terrifying. In just a little while, he would hold his son for the last time. Today, he would say goodbye. Jonah was in tears as soon as he rushed into the room, racing straight for the bed. Steve had just enough time to open his arms before Jonah fell into them. His bird-like shoulders were shuddering, and Steve felt his own heart breaking. He concentrated on how his son felt against him, trying to memorize the sensation. He loved his children more than life itself, but more than that, he knew that Jonah needed him, and once more he was struck by the realization that he was failing as a father. Jonah continued to cry inconsolably. Steve held him close, wanting never to let go. Ronnie and Kim stood in the doorway, keeping their distance.
"They're trying to send me home, Daddy," Jonah whimpered. "I told them I could stay with you, but they're not listening. I'll be good, Daddy. I promise I'll be good. I'll go to bed when you tell me to, and I'll clean my room, and I won't eat cookies when I'm not supposed to. Tell them I can stay. I promise to be good."
"I know you'd be good," Steve murmured. "You've always been good."
"Then tell her, Dad. Tell her you want me to stay. Please, just tell her."
"I do want you to stay," he said, hurting for himself and for his son. "I want that more than anything, but your mom needs you too. She misses you." If Jonah had held out any hope, it ended then and there, and he began to cry again.
"But I'm never going to see you again. And it's not fair. It's just not fair."
Steve tried to talk through the tightness in his throat. "Hey," he said, "I want you to listen to me, okay? Can you do that for me?" Jonah forced himself to look up. Though he tried not to, Steve knew he was beginning to choke on his words. It took everything he had not to break down in front of his son. "I want you to know that you're the best son a dad could hope to have. I've always been so proud of you, and I know you're going to grow up and do wonderful things. I love you so much."
"I love you too, Daddy, and I'm going to miss you so much."
From the corner of his eye, Steve could see Ronnie and Kim, tears running down their faces. "I'm going to miss you too, but I'm always going to watch over you, okay? I promise. Do you remember the window we made together?" Jonah nodded, his little jaw quivering. "I call it God light, because it reminds me of heaven. Every time the light shines through the window we built, or any window at all, you'll know I'm right there with you, okay? That's gonna be me. I'll be the light in the window.
Jonah nodded, not even bothering to wipe away his tears. Steve continued to hold his son, wishing with all his heart that he could make things better.
Chapter 35. Ronnie. Ronnie went outside with her mom and Jonah to see them off, and to speak with her mom alone before she left, asking her to do something for her as soon as she got back to New York. Then she returned to the hospital and sat with her dad, waiting until he fell asleep. For a long time, he remained silent, staring out the window. She held his hand, and they sat together without speaking, both of them watching the clouds drifting slowly beyond the glass. She wanted to stretch her legs and get some fresh air. Her dad's goodbye to Jonah had left her drained and shaky. She didn't want to picture her brother on the plane or entering their apartment. She didn't want to think about whether he was still crying. Outside, she walked along the sidewalk in front of the hospital, her mind wandering. She was almost past him when she heard him clear his throat. He was seated on a bench. Despite the heat, he wore the same kind of long-sleeve shirt he always did.
"Hi, Ronnie," Pastor Harris said.
"Oh, hi.
I was hoping to visit with your father."
"He's sleeping," she said. "But you can go up there if you want." He tapped his cane, buying time.
"I'm sorry for what you're going through, Ronnie."
She nodded, finding it hard to concentrate. Even this simple conversation seemed impossibly arduous. Somehow, she got the sense he felt the same way.
"Would you pray with me?"
His blue eyes held a plea.
"I like to pray before I see your dad. It helps me."
Her surprise gave way to an unexpected sense of relief. "I'd like that very much," she answered. She began to pray regularly after that, and she found that Pastor Harris was right. Not that she believed her dad would be cured. She'd spoken to the doctor and seen the scans. And after their conversation, she'd left the hospital and gone to the beach, and cried for an hour while her tears dried in the wind. She didn't believe in miracles. She knew that some people did, but she couldn't force herself to think that her dad was somehow going to make it. Not after what she'd seen. Not after the way the doctor had explained it. The cancer, she'd learned, had metastasized from his stomach to his pancreas and lungs. And holding out hope seemed dangerous. She couldn't imagine having to come to terms a second time with what was happening to him. It was hard enough already, especially late at night when the house was quiet and she was alone with her thoughts. Instead, she prayed for the strength she needed to help her dad. She prayed for the ability to stay positive in his presence, instead of crying every time she saw him. She knew he needed her laughter, and he needed the daughter she'd recently become. The first thing she did after bringing him home from the hospital was to take him to see the stained glass window. She watched as he slowly approached the table, his eyes taking in everything, his expression one of shocked disbelief. She knew then that there had been moments when he'd wondered whether he would live long enough to see it through. More than anything, she wished Jonah had been there with them, and she knew her dad was thinking the same thing. It had been their project, the way they'd spent their summer. He missed Jonah terribly. He missed him more than anything. And though he turned away so she couldn't see his face, she knew there were tears in his eyes as he made his way back to the house. He called Jonah as soon as he got back inside. From the living room, Ronnie could hear her dad's assurances that he was feeling better. And though Jonah would likely misinterpret that, she knew her dad had done the right thing. He wanted Jonah to remember the happiness of the summer, not dwell on what was coming next. That night, as he sat on the couch, he opened the Bible and began to read. Ronnie now understood his reasons. She took a seat beside him,
and asked the question she'd been wondering about since she examined the book herself.
"Do you have a favorite passage?" she asked.
"Many," he said. "I've always enjoyed the Psalms, and I always learned a lot from the letters of Paul."
"But you don't underline anything," she said. When he raised an eyebrow, she shrugged. "I looked through it while you were gone, and I didn't see anything."
He thought about his answer. "If I tried to underline something important, I'd probably end up underlining almost everything. I've read it so many times, I always learn something new."
She studied him carefully.
"I don't remember you reading the Bible before."
"That's because you were young. I kept this Bible by my bed, and I'd read through parts of it once or twice a week."
"Ask your mom. She'll tell you. Have you read anything lately that you'd like to share?
Do you want me to?"
After she nodded, it took him only a minute to find the passage he wanted.
"It's Galatians 5:22," he said, pressing the Bible flat in his lap. He cleared his throat before he started. "But when the Holy Spirit controls our lives, he will produce this kind of fruit in us. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control." She watched him as he read the verse, remembering how she'd acted when she'd first arrived, and how he'd responded to her anger. She remembered the times he'd refused to argue with her mom, even when she'd tried to provoke him. She'd seen that as a weakness and often wished her father were different. But all at once, she knew she'd been wrong about everything. Her dad, she saw now, had never been acting alone. The Holy Spirit had been controlling his life all along. The package from her mom arrived the following day, and Ronnie knew her mom had done what she'd asked. She brought the large envelope to the kitchen table and tore it straight across the top, then dumped the contents on the table. 19 letters, all of them sent by her dad, all of them ignored and unopened. She noted the various return addresses he'd scrawled across the top: Bloomington, Tulsa, Little Rock. She couldn't believe she hadn't read them. Had she really been that angry? That bitter? That mean? Looking back, she knew the answer, but it still didn't make sense to her. Thumbing through the letters, she looked for the first one he'd written. Like most of the others, it was printed neatly in black ink, and the postmark had faded slightly. Beyond the kitchen window, her dad was standing on the beach with his back to the house. Like Pastor Harris, he'd begun to wear long sleeves despite the summer heat. Taking a deep breath, she opened the letter, and there, in the sunlight of the kitchen, she began to read. "Dear Ronnie, I don't even know how to start a letter like this, other than to say that I'm sorry. That's why I asked you to meet with me at the cafe, and what I wanted to tell you later that night when I called. I can understand why you didn't come and why you didn't take my call. You're angry with me. You're disappointed in me. And in your heart, you believe I've run away. In your mind, I've abandoned you and abandoned the family. I can't deny that things are going to be different, but I want you to know that if I were in your shoes, I would probably feel much the way you do. You have every right to be angry with me. You have every right to be disappointed in me. I suppose I've earned the feelings you have, and it's not my intent to try to make excuses or cast any blame, or try to convince you that you might understand it in time. In all honesty, you might not, and that would hurt me more than you could ever imagine. You and Jonah have always meant so much to me, and I want you to understand that neither you nor Jonah were to blame for anything. Sometimes, for reasons that aren't always clear, marriages just don't work out. But remember this: I will always love you,
and I will always love Jonah. I will always love your mother, and she will always have my respect. She is the giver of the two greatest gifts I've ever received, and she's been a wonderful mother. In many ways, despite the sadness I feel that your mother and I will no longer be together, I still believe it was a blessing to have been married to her for as long as I was. I know this isn't much, and it's certainly not enough to make you understand, but I want you to know that I still believe in the gift of love. I want you to believe in it too. You deserve that in your life, for nothing is more fulfilling than love itself. I hope that in your heart, you'll find some way to forgive me for leaving. It doesn't have to be now, or even soon, but I want you to know this. When you're finally ready, I'll be waiting with open arms on what will be the happiest day of my life. I love you, Dad. I feel like I should be doing more for him, Ronnie said. She was sitting on the back porch across from Pastor Harris. Her dad was inside sleeping, and Pastor Harris had come by with a pan of lasagna that his wife had made. It was mid-September, and still hot during the day, though there had been an evening a couple of days earlier that hinted at the crispness of autumn. It lasted only a single night. In the morning, the sun was hot, and Ronnie had found herself strolling the beach and wondering whether the night before had been an illusion. "You're doing all you can," he said. "I don't know that there's anything more you could be doing. I'm not talking about taking care of him. Right now, he doesn't even need me that much. He still insists on cooking, and we go for walks on the beach. We even flew kites yesterday. Aside from the pain medication, which makes him really tired, he's pretty much the same as before he went to the hospital. It's just..." Pastor Harris's gaze was full of understanding. "You want to do something special. Something that means a lot to him." She nodded, glad that he was here. In the past few weeks, Pastor Harris had become not only her friend, but the only person she could really talk to. "I have faith that God will show you the answer. But you have to understand that sometimes it takes a while to be able to recognize what God wants you to do. That's how it often is. God's voice is usually nothing more than a whisper, and you have to listen very carefully to hear it. But other times, in those rarest of moments, the answer is obvious and rings as loud as a church bell." She smiled, thinking she'd grown fond of their conversations. "You sound like you talk from experience. I love your dad, too. And like you, I wanted to do something special for him." "And God answered?"
"God always answers."
Was it a whisper or a church bell? For the first time in a long while, she saw a touch of mirth in his eyes.
"A church bell, of course. God knows I'm hard of hearing these days."
"What are you going to do?" He sat up straighter in his chair.
"I'm going to install the window in the church," he said. "A benefactor showed up out of the blue last week and not only offered to cover the rest of the repairs in full, but already had all the work crews lined up. They start work again tomorrow morning."
Over the next couple of days, Ronnie listened for church bells, but all she heard were seagulls. When listening for whispers, she heard nothing at all. It didn't necessarily surprise her. The answer hadn't come to Pastor Harris right away either, but she hoped the answer would come before it was too late. Instead, she simply continued on as she had before. She helped her dad when he needed help, let him be when he didn't, and tried to make the most of the remaining time they had together. That weekend, because her dad was feeling stronger, they made an outing to Orton Plantation Gardens near Southport.
It wasn't far from Wilmington, and Ronnie had never been before. But as they pulled onto the graveled road that led to the original mansion built in 1735, she already knew it was going to be a memorable day. It was the kind of place that seemed lost in time. The flowers were no longer in bloom, but as they walked among the giant oaks with their low-slung branches draped in Spanish moss, Ronnie thought that she'd never been anywhere more beautiful. Strolling under the trees, her arm looped through her father's, they talked about the summer. For the first time, Ronnie told her dad about her relationship with Will. She told him about the first time they went fishing and the times they went mudding. She described his fancy dive from the cabana roof. And she told him all about the fiasco at the wedding. She didn't, however, tell him what happened on the day before he left for Vanderbilt, or the things she'd said to him. She wasn't ready for that. The wound was still too raw. And as always, when she talked, her dad listened quietly, rarely interjecting, even when she trailed off. She liked that about him. No, change that, she thought. She loved that about him. And she found herself wondering who she would have become had she never come down for the summer. Afterward, they drove into Southport and had dinner at one of the small restaurants overlooking the harbor. She knew her dad was getting tired, but the food was good, and they split a hot fudge brownie at the end of the meal. It was a good day, a day she knew she'd always remember. But as she sat alone in the living room after her dad had gone to bed, she once again found herself thinking that there was something more she could do for him. The following week, the third week of September, she began to notice that her dad was getting worse. He now slept until mid-morning and took another nap in the afternoon. Though he'd been taking naps regularly, the naps began to lengthen, and he went to bed earlier in the evenings. As she cleaned the kitchen for want of anything better to do, she realized after adding it all up that he was now sleeping more than half the day. It only got worse after that. With every passing day, he slept a little longer. He also wasn't eating enough. Instead, he moved his food around the plate and made a show of eating. When she scraped the remains into the garbage, she realized he'd only been nibbling. He was losing weight steadily now, and every time she blinked, she had the sense that her dad was getting smaller. Sometimes, she was frightened by the thought that one day there would be nothing left of him at all. September came to an end. In the mornings, the salty smell of the ocean was kept at bay by the winds from the mountains in the eastern part of the state. It was still hot, high season for hurricanes, but as yet the coast of North Carolina had been spared. The day before, her dad had slept for 14 hours. She knew he couldn't help it, that his body gave him no choice, but she ached at the thought he was sleeping through most of the little time he had left. When her dad was awake, he was quieter now, content to read the Bible or walk slowly with her in silence. More often than she expected, she found herself thinking about Will. She still wore the macrame bracelet he had given her, and as she ran her finger over its intricate weave, she wondered what classes he was taking, whom he walked beside on the greens, as he moved from one building to the next. She was curious whom he sat next to when he ate in the cafeteria, and whether he ever thought of her as he got ready to go out on a Friday or Saturday night. Perhaps, she thought in her lowest moments, he'd already met someone new. "Do you want to talk about it?" her dad asked her one day as they strolled along the beach. They were making their way toward the church. Since the construction had started up again, things were moving fast. The crew was massive, framers, electricians, men who specialized in trim carpentry or drywall. There were at least 40 trucks on the worksite, and people flowed in and out of the building constantly. "About what?" she asked carefully. "About Will," he said. "The way it ended between the two of you." She gave him an appraising stare. "How could you possibly know about that?" He shrugged. Because you've mentioned him only in passing over the past few weeks. And you never talked to him on the phone. It's not hard to figure out that something happened.
It's complicated, she said reluctantly. They walked a few steps in silence before her dad spoke again. If it matters to you, I thought he was an exceptional young man.
She looped her arm through his.
Yes, it does matter. And I thought so too. By then they'd reached the church. She could see workers carrying in loads of lumber and cans of paint, and as usual, her eyes sought out the empty space beneath the steeple. The window hadn't been installed yet. Most of the construction had to be completed first to prevent the fragile glass pieces from cracking. But her dad still liked to visit. He was pleased by the renewed construction, but not primarily because of the window. He spoke constantly of how important the church was to Pastor Harris, and how much the pastor missed preaching in the place that he'd long considered a second home. Pastor Harris was always on site, and usually he would walk down to the beach to visit with them when they arrived. Looking around now, she spotted him standing in the gravel parking lot. He was talking to someone as he gestured animatedly at the building. Even from a distance, she could tell he was smiling. She was about to wave in an attempt to get his attention when she suddenly recognized the man he was talking to. The sight startled her. The last time she'd seen him, she'd been distraught. The last time they'd been together, he hadn't bothered to say goodbye. Perhaps Tom Blakely had simply been driving by and stopped to talk to the pastor about the rebuilding of the church. Maybe he was just interested. For the rest of the week, she watched for Tom Blakely when they visited the site, but she never saw him there again. Part of her was relieved, she admitted, that their worlds no longer intersected. After their walks to the church and her dad's afternoon nap, they usually read together. She finished Anna Karenina 4 months after she'd first started reading it. She checked out Dr. Zhivago from the public library. Something about the Russian writers appealed to her. The epic quality of their stories, perhaps. Bleak tragedy and doomed love affairs painted on a grand canvas. So far removed from her own ordinary life. Her dad continued to study his Bible. And sometimes, he'd read a passage or verse aloud at her request. Some were short, and others were long. But many of them seemed to focus on the meaning of faith. She wasn't sure why, but she sometimes got the sense that the act of reading them aloud had shed light on a nuance or meaning that he had previously missed. Dinners were becoming simple affairs. In early October, she began to do most of the cooking, and he accepted this change as easily as he had accepted everything else over the summer. Most of the time, he would sit in the kitchen and they would talk as she boiled pasta or rice and browned some chicken or steak in the pan. It was the first time she'd cooked meat in years, and she felt strange prodding her dad to eat it after putting the plate in front of him. He wasn't hungry much anymore, and the meals were bland because spices of any kind irritated his stomach. But she knew he needed food. Though he didn't have a scale in the house, she could see the pounds melting away. One night after dinner, she finally told him what had happened with Will. She told him everything. About the fire and his attempts to cover for Scott, about all that had transpired with Marcus. Her dad listened intently as she spoke, and when at last he pushed aside his plate, she noticed he hadn't eaten more than a few bites.
"Can I ask you a question?"
"Of course," she said. "You can ask me anything."
"When you told me that you were in love with Will, did you mean it?"
She remembered Megan asking her the same question.
"Yes." "Then I think you might have been too hard on him."
"But he was covering up a crime."
"I know. But if you think about it, you're now in the same position that he was. You know the truth, just as he did. And you've said nothing to anyone either."
"But I didn't do it."
"And you said that he didn't either."
"What are you trying to say? That I should tell Pastor Harris?" He shook his head.
"No, he said to her surprise.
I don't think you should.
Why?
Ronnie, he said gently, there might be more to the story than meets the eye.
But I'm not saying I'm right. I'll be the first to admit I'm wrong about a lot of things.
But if everything is just as you described it, then I want you to know this. Pastor Harris doesn't want to know the truth. Because if he does, he'll have to do something about it. And trust me, he would never want to hurt Scott or his family, especially if it was an accident. He's just not that kind of man. And one more thing, and of everything I've said, this is the most important.
What's that?
You need to learn how to forgive.
She crossed her arms. I've already forgiven Will. I've left him messages. Even before she finished, her dad was shaking his head.
I'm not talking about Will. You need to learn to forgive yourself first.
That night, at the bottom of the stack of letters her dad had written, Ronnie found another letter, one she hadn't yet opened. He must have added it to the stack recently, since it bore no stamp or postmark. She didn't know whether he wanted her to read it now or whether it was meant to be read after he was gone. She supposed she could have asked him, but she didn't. In truth, she wasn't sure she wanted to read it. Simply holding the envelope frightened her, because she knew that it was the last letter he would ever write to her. His disease continued to progress. Though they followed their regular routines, eating, reading, and taking walks on the beach, her dad was taking more medicine for his pain. There were times when his eyes were glassy and out of focus, but she still had the sense that the dosage wasn't strong enough. Now and then she would see him wince as he sat reading on the couch. He would close his eyes and lean back, his face a mask of pain. When that happened, he would grip her hand. But as the days wore on, she noticed that his grip was growing weaker. His strength was fading, she thought. Everything about him was fading. And soon, he would be gone completely. She could tell Pastor Harris noticed the changes in her dad as well. He'd been coming by almost every day in recent weeks, usually right before dinner. For the most part, he kept the conversation light. He updated them on the construction or regaled them with amusing stories from his past, bringing a fleeting smile to her father's face. But there were also moments when both of them seemed to run out of things to say to each other. Avoiding the elephant in the room was taxing for all of them. And in those moments, a fog of sadness seemed to settle in the living room. When she sensed that they wanted to be alone, she would go stand out on the porch and try to imagine what they might be talking about. She could guess, of course. They talked about faith or family, and maybe some regrets they each had. But she knew they also prayed together. She heard them once when she'd gone inside to get a glass of water, and she remembered thinking that Pastor Harris's prayer sounded more like a plea. He seemed to be begging for strength as though his own life depended on it. And as she listened to him, she closed her eyes to chime in with a silent